KMOX at your service. Welcome to the Helitech Foundation Repair Home Improvement Show. Presented by Suburban Leisure Center on Olive, 1 mile west of 141. Now, here's your host, Scott Mosby, on KMOX.
And good morning, good Saturday, KMOX, two full hours today. Home improvement is the topic. You are what we are talking about. Any questions around your home, your office, the places we're responsible for, how we resolve winter with the coming spring and summer, the energy efficiency of those homes as we deal with this cold, chilly shot that comes through? Well, you know, it is. It's part of having that beautiful, lush greenery in the summer. Phone lines for you today on KMOX is 314-436-7900. Bring your topic here. I'll give you the best of my experience. We have about 30 to 50,000 people, all consultants listening, ready to help you as well on the lines. So we're going to share the common knowledge of the family of KMOX today. And I call it the University of KMOX. Sometimes I am the instructor, sometimes I am the student, and we change as opportunities provide, because it's always an opportunity to learn. My name is Scott Mosby. I've been on this show for, a long time. Long enough for me to learn a lot of stuff. Maybe same for you. One of the things that I was most worried about years ago when I was asked by KMOX to host this show, how can I know those answers? And the reality became very quickly clear, you can't. All you can do is do your best, share what you know, ask for help when you don't. And lo and behold, some of the stuff I've learned here, as well as an extension of this role I play on KMOX, as people tell me all their best experiences. Hey, Scott, did you hear the one about how to get this thing clean? No. How does that work? And off we go, and I learned something there in a party, in a social situation, as well as right here on KMOX. We are AM dial 1120, also shared through KMOX.com, KMOX.com, and also radio.com. Take us with you wherever you are on that app or application. So if you have a smartphone, you can log on to the App Store or, the website of that company and pick up that application, and it is with you on that smartphone always. Phone lines here, 314-436-7900, toll free anywhere on the globe, on the planet. If you have internet and connectivity or a phone line, it's 800-925-1120, 800-925-1120. And we talk about winterizing homes, making homes ready for a week or two that you might be away. Perhaps you're traveling, perhaps you're hunkering down, or like myself, maybe you're hiding under the bed most of the time, hoping this thing will pass. Well, yeah, that's a little bit of an exaggeration. Anyway, my day job is Mosby Building Arts. We are more than 70 years old. Second, now I call it a third generation family business, and we enjoy the business. I immensely enjoy this career. I work with creative people. I work with engineers. I work with architects, all the various trades, as well as many artists and designers in how to create. So I'm involved in the dreaming end of the business of what can be, what is possible, how can we make these dreams come into reality. And then you bring it through, it's like, well, we still have to hold the roof up. We have to figure out how those trusses get modified for making that view available to that room, on and on. And then what is the plumbing, electrical, and heating and cooling needs, and how does that get modified? On we go to, okay, let's make this thing happen on time, on budget, with a happy client, all that. So I enjoy this career a lot because it is always different, always challenging, and ever-changing. So anyway, that's why we have a lot to talk about here on University of KMOX. Enough of that. We've got an early phone caller here, and let's go right to Ann and talk to her this morning. Ann, good morning. Welcome to KMOX. How can we help you here this Saturday morning?
Hi, good morning. Thanks. I have a question. I had my bathroom sink faucets and spigot replaced. And ever since, like it was immediate, the hot water takes an incredibly long time to come through. It's like 2 quarts of water. I've measured it. And I don't know why that would be, because it was immediate after this was installed. Do you think something was done improperly?
No, I understand that you have less water coming through a newer faucet than you do an old faucet. So there are flow restrictors or little things that get in the way of free flow of water. So you may get an aerated water flow. So although it came instantaneously, it could have been after 2 quarts. It's just that 2 quarts were delivered in the old faucet, you know, maybe in 2 seconds. And now it takes 4 or 5 to get through because there's so much air in it. So you may be in the exact same flow situation in terms of how much water's coming out of the pipe, but what's being allowed to come out of the end of that spigot or faucet, if you will, with that aerator and a flow restrictor on it. Now you can unscrew that little thing on the end. There's usually an aerator on the end of the faucet there, Ann, and be very careful. Close your drain, you know, the pop-up, make sure that's down because a lot of little pieces can come out of there. Unscrew that very carefully and slowly and then look in there. And usually there's a screen and then this fitting that unscrews. And then there might be a piece of metal that has smaller holes in it. That's a flow restrictor. And that's to meet, you know, how many gallons per minute. It's a water conservation method that, you know, you can still get your hands washed without using 4 gallons of water. So that's why it's done. But I'm proposing there is a possibility nothing has really changed other than the rate of water coming out at the end of that spigot.
Okay, because if that's a flow restrictor, it didn't seem to change, you know, the intensity of the water coming out. So, I mean, I'm all for, you know, saving water, but I thought it was kind of strange.
Well, there's another thing, too. The aperture, the pipe, the diameter of the actual faucet, too. Now that we're in water-conserving times, much different than 10, 20, 30 years ago, you know, the size of the flow pipes inside those faucets are different. So the aperture, the actual opening, you may be indeed getting just what you suspect, just less flat-out water. So that's possible as well. But if it's operating correctly, I would propose that probably it's operating the way it was designed.
Okay. Thank you.
And I get these questions a lot around furnaces that, you know, I mean, I had, you know, the house would heat up in 2 minutes, you know, and it was quiet, and now it heats up in 4 minutes, and it's really noisy. Well, the difference becomes in how many air changes. So that blower motor, the fan on the air handler, the furnace on a forced air furnace, you know, it's pumping 3 times as much air. Well, that is 3 times as noisy. So indeed, you know, everything might be different just as they're experiencing, but it's as designed by the current requirements or you know, performance measures.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, well, I talked all around that one. I don't know why it's really happened, but it could be one of those two. But if it's acceptable to you, it's okay. I mean, you can change and get instant hot and all kinds of other, you know, pricey things that cost a lot to repipe and such. But, you know, if it's working well enough, I think it may be just the way those faucets are designed.
Mm-hmm. All righty.
Okay, Ann. Take care. Good morning, and thanks for getting us started.
You're welcome.
All right. Home Improvement, Scott Mosby, off and running. And indeed, think about air filters. Think about, if you have a heat pump. The heat pump has an outside kind of condenser or air compressor thing. And if you have an electric heat pump heater, you still need to keep the air flowing freely outside on that outside condenser. So make sure you keep things away from that blowing fan unit outdoors, 2 to 3 feet. Don't stack wheelbarrows and buckets and, you know, planter pots and all that around that area. Let the air move through that because it is very important in how it handles making heat out of compressed gas. Phone lines here on KMOX, 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900, toll-free 800-925-1120. We've got two full hours today, lots of things to talk about. We'll talk a little bit about ice melt, energy efficiency, also some of the kitchen remodeling trends that are going on for 2021, and color trends as well. So we're going to get into that with some of our compatriot companies around the country that have written these articles. So they're kind of interesting because it's from different parts of our geography around the country, as well as central to our industry, where we are served by a group of manufacturers and suppliers that are typically nationally based. So it's interesting how each region of the U.S. processes and picks up color trends, because we are a product of our environment. If I am in a place that has a lot of wood, a lot of wood gets used. If I'm in a stony, rocky area, then it becomes a lot of masonry and stone construction. So it's very interesting how we uptake these various trends. Phone lines, KMOX 314-436-7900, toll free 800-925. My name is Scott Mosby. This is KMOX, and we both are at your service.
Welcome back to the Helitech Foundation Repair Home Improvement Show, presented by Suburban Leisure Center on Olive, 1 mile west of 141. Now, once again, your host, Scott Mosby on KMOX.
All right, welcome back. Saturday morning, KMOX. We are hot and lively. Live and lively, as Mike Miller says with the KMOX Garden Hotline. I don't know how lively we are, but we're surely not hot outside. Hopefully you're warm, snugly, and comfortable inside. As we get into comfort, make sure, or today, and these conditions are kind of conducive to measuring the weather strip around your doors and windows. So if you can just take your hand and just move it around the perimeter of the door or the window sash, where they open and close together, and just feel around there. And if you're aware of the temperature change around that joint between the actual door panel and the door frame, or the window sash and the window frame, that is kind of a measurement. And when it gets windy, then you'll be even more aware of what that difference is. And that can tell you whether or not you focus on that particular area, whether it is a weather stripping thing. And keep in mind, windows that are built in a production-driven subdivision, in other words, where the builder might buy tractor-trailer loads of windows, those windows may not be performance-driven choices. They may be more economically driven choices. So the lifespan of that product may be 10 to 15 years. So if you're living in a home that's about 15 years old with insulated glass, it may not be the insulated glass that is the weakest link in your comfort, because you may have such a leakage area, or what we call air infiltration, which is just a cleaned up way to say window leak or air leaks. That's an issue that really changes the air. And likewise, one of the things we learned when we got in our early years of energy efficiency is we're learning as a company and a process of how to deliver remodeling projects, that you can't just necessarily plug that leak. You have to go check your gas appliances. So is my cooktop lighting and operating efficiently to where it's not spilling off an undue amount of carbon monoxide? Is my gas water heater properly vented that it's exhausting all of that carbon monoxide up the chimney, or my gas log in the fireplace, or my furnace, all those things? Or do I actually have a house that's too tight that when I turn on that vent fan on my new whiz-bang cooktop and that hood that's just so beautiful, and it draws so much air out of the house, it literally pulls the carbon monoxide down the chimney, into the house, inhaling it into the house. So oftentimes, plugging air leaks is only half of it. So that's why when you get into improving the energy efficiency of your home and air infiltration, sometimes it's a 3 or 4 point change. You can't just plug the leak, because you may be having air leak in that is keeping you safe and the oxygen levels high enough and the CO or carbon monoxide low enough for your safety. Let's get back to the phone lines here. Get on and talk with my friend Pat. Hey, Pat, good morning. Welcome to KMOX. How can I help you?
Good morning, Scott, and thank you for the show. I just wanted to comment on your reply, and I agree with everything you said. Mm-hmm. However, there's one more tip I wanted to add in. Many times when these faucets are installed, they create some debris in the lines, And that accumulates in that aerator. So like you said, if she'll just carefully unscrew that from the faucet tip and rinse it and get out that debris that probably has accumulated in there from the install, I think that'll probably be the very simplest thing that she can start with.
Oh, thanks, Pat. I missed that. Good ad there. Nice catch. So anyway, well, let's go back then. So Ann, if you're still listening, Pat's offering that there is debris. When we cut pipes, when we take things apart, all of that mineral buildup oftentimes looks like sand grit, gets knocked loose, and it comes along with the water, and it flushes through that new whiz-bang faucet. And like Ann is saying, or like Pat's saying, that is grit that ends up in that screen, the aerator, the last point of where the water's coming out, and it does get blocked. So thanks, Pat. Saved by the bell. All right.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. There we go. University of KMOX. Oh, we are better together than we are apart. Amen to that. Thanks, Pat. And one more time, the aerator, and this is as you do remodeling, anytime you're doing any repairs plumbing-wise in your house, or the water company is doing a repair out in the street or 3 miles from your house when they change water main issues. And we're going to get into that because it happens every winter. When the temperature drops, that soil changes, and the temperature of the water actually with the soil changes, and the length, the expansion and contraction, those pipes get shorter because they get smaller when they're colder. So those pipes move a little. They fail, crack, break, separate, whatever it is, and that stuff all then gets waterborne because it knocks off of the inside of the pipe. So in medical terms, for a human, it's kind of like having a stroke. You have a little bit of something that breaks loose, starts flying around in the bloodstream. As long as it's in a big blood vessel, it's fine. But when it winds up in a tiny little capillary somewhere, you know, it can plug, block, and make a problem. So for all of you physician and medical people out there, you know, you might wind up with a particle of something blocking it and a little cause for angst. Phone lines 314-436-7900. 800-925-1120. Let's see what's up next with Matt. Hey, Matthew, good morning, sir. How can I help?
Morning to you. Hey, great to chat with you. Thank you for taking my call. My family and I have been in our home in the Metro East for about 16 years now. We bought it as an inventory home, so it was a new construction. It does sit on a poured concrete foundation, an unfinished basement. In the corner of that basement, as you would typically find in new construction, there is a sump well. Mm-hmm. It's got a hard black plastic cover on it, you know, with little inlets and things, so that you know, if you ever decide to install a sump pump, it would be easy enough to do. I'm curious, you know, and the edges of that that black topping are kind of formed down into the concrete of the foundation. I've never opened it up. I know that curiosity killed the cat, though, so there are times when I want to kind of pop that thing open and see what's happening in there and see where the water level is, but I never have in 16 years. The basement's never been wet. Should I just leave well enough alone and not worry about it as long as the basement's dry?
No, I would offer this is cause for review. This is a data point. There's information available by looking down in that sump bucket or sump pit. Basically, it's about a 30-gallon trash can. I'm simplifying this, buried down into the soil with holes in it. And oftentimes, new home builders, because of the extreme cost of fixing a leaking basement, they put this drain tile in. They may not put a sump pump in it because they don't suspect it's going to be a problem. If they have to add the sump pump, they just come back in and they add the sump pump. It all connects up and well and good. So it's very common in new homes now that this sump bucket, sump pit, or well is put into new homes and the lid over it. But when you pull that lid off, you might find it bone dry. you might find 4 inches of water in the bottom of it. When we get heavy rainfall, you know, say coming up here in 2-3 months in the springs when the skies open up again, you know, I'd like to see, is there 12 inches of standing water? Because that will tell you, kind of like our body temperatures that we're doing for the virus now, how we doing on that. It'll tell you how your house and the underground piping is collecting that water and getting rid of it. Because if it's bone dry all the time, you're a rare, you know, good luck house built, or that it's happening with gravity. You might be high enough on the hill that the water just naturally gravity drains itself from underneath your foundation. I guarantee the water gets down there, but it probably drains out on its own. So I like the information, and it's kind of like taking your temperature every now and again. But, you know, in 16 years, if you haven't had a problem, you probably won't, unless there's some seismic change, you know, something shifts underneath that soil somewhere. But, right. you know, Metro East is, you know, that soil generally, you know, you'd have a problem by now.
And at what point, if I do pop the lid off and take a look, at what point do I need to be concerned that maybe it is time for a sump pump?
When you start losing sleep. You know, when that that's an honest answer. That is an honest answer, because if you see that water come up and it's 4 inches below the top and you're worrying about that, and then you go back there to the next day and the water's gone, you know that something's happening down there. And the question is, do you want to continue banking that luck is going to get you by, or do I want to take control of this situation? I'm willing to spend the $1,000, get this thing hooked up or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, again, but that's, for me, homeownership, almost everything in life for me is how do I sleep at night? Because sometimes my subconscious is a lot smarter than the rest of me. You know what I mean?
I completely know what you mean. Yeah. Thank you very much. I appreciate the information.
You bet, Matt. Take care. Good question,
you
by
too.
The way. All right.
Thanks.
Hey, there we go. And again, we all improve with time, and production builders generally put in a pretty good version of water control. And if they don't, then they're pretty much squeezing the dollar just a little bit too hard. Because frankly, reputation is everything. And, you know, how we protect that, you know, what you think of me is very important to how much I invest in preventing future problems. It's easy to look good when we're just finished with a construction project. What really is the calling card for quality is 5, 7, 8 years from now, or 16 years later, with Matt in his basement, somebody did something right and thought it through and put that sump pit in there. And for me, maybe I'm just a little bit of, well, I know I'm a lot of a geek, frankly. I would pull that lid just to see what's going on because, you know, well, I know how to interpret the information, number one. Number two, I just kind of like know what's going on in my surroundings. I'm kind of one of those guys that, you know, I pull up at a 4-way stop and I try to figure out who's going to jump out first. And, you know, it's like, I think I'll wait this out while those three testosterone-driven drivers are going to clear this intersection. So likewise, that I'm going to look at that sump pit. Let's see what's happening here. How about Marianne? Hey, Marianne, Scott Mosby, good Saturday to you. Welcome to KMOX. How can I help?
Hello. Thank you for taking my phone call.
Yeah.
I'm calling for my son. He has a brand new home construction, about 6 months old, and he has a problem with the floor squeaking. Mm-hmm. It's constant. It's here. It's there. You never know where you're going to hear the noise. You can actually feel the bumps and the dips in the flooring. Mm-hmm. We had a home inspector come in, and he told us we had substandard under flooring, not mm-hmm. the Mohawk flooring on top. What can be done about that?
Substandard, the Mohawk would be the actual carpet, then you've got carpet pad, and then you've got the subfloor or the underlayment. I suspect squeaking is more commonly related to the wood part underneath the flooring. Are you referring, in your mind, Marianne, to wood squeaking, something underneath that carpet?
Well, I'm mostly thinking we do have carpet in the 3 bedrooms, but all the other areas is the Mohawk the Mohawk flooring, hard flooring.
Okay,
and,
I see.
It's what they tell me, a free-floating floor. But
okay.
You just never know where the squeaks are. It's around the island in the kitchen. It's going down the hall. We still have 6 months dealing with the home builder. But, I mean, if it's squeaking now, it's only going to get worse. And I am really concerned about resale value.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me tell you a little story about my experience on this. It can be the flooring. When you have a floating floor, what that means is the top finish wearing surface, that Mohawk material, it moves a lot because it floats on a squishy base that allows and frankly is supposed to deaden sound, and it does. But wherever that flooring meets from piece to piece, those joints, literally, if they move too much, they get noisy. I mean, it's, for example, if my knees and ankles and elbows, if they move too much, they make unusual noises that shouldn't happen. So likewise, there may be too much movement. I will say, when you're talking about going down the hallway or going into the kitchen, years ago, I built a custom home in the 1980s, and I personally crawled around on that floor before all the finished floors were, and I double nailed and I nailed over loose nails. I mean, I prepared that subfloor to make sure there were no issues, and we had a squeak in the kitchen, and it was by the island.
You can actually feel the lumps and the dips in the flooring.
Right. Well, that's what I'm getting at. The structure of the floor, keep in mind that, and this ties into my story, as you walk on the floor, the wall may stay up in the air, and the floor loading from your walking down the hallway may depress, or what's called deflect, the floor joists. And if those floor joists, especially on a new engineered flooring system, they spread them out pretty far, and they value engineering them to that they may move a lot. Well, when you get a hallway wall covered with drywall, it becomes kind of a structural beam, and it'll stay straight. And the floor may flex out from underneath it. And what we discovered in the kitchen island in my story is we had this big paneling piece on the back of a piece of cabinetry that kept the cabinets straight, and the floor actually was flexing under the load of people walking by. What we did is I took a sawzall and cut the nails underneath that moving piece, and the squeak stopped. The floor was dropping out from underneath the perimeter. So keep an open mind is my point here. It may not be only the flooring, and you got a good opinion, I think, from the home inspector that the floor may be flexing a lot. Also, consider that the floor structure, and it could be what he meant, actually, is your floor joist system, the structure system, is flexing and moving too much where it drops out from underneath. And, you know, where the walls are nailed down to the floor, they're nailed down with, you know, metal shafted nails. And if there's an undue or excessive amount of deflection or sag in the floor when you walk by, you can get a very noisy house, especially in those traffic areas, hallways, around the kitchen. Sooner or later, it'll be in front of the sink, all that sort of stuff. So I'm just saying, keep an open mind. It may be more than just the flooring material itself and its substrate.
Okay, what can I get the builder to do? Because we still have 6 months before they walk away from the problem, and then it's going to land in my son's lap.
Well, get on notice with them, because once you open a needs improvement or an issue like this, a warranty issue, you need to be inside that 12-month or whatever their warranty time is to get going, and then just stay with it as an unresolved issue, and that will outlive the 12 months. So keep in mind that builder has their reputation, and generally they're pretty schooled in their houses where flexes and squeaks come. So frankly, you want them on your team pretty soon, because they generally know all of the engineering and value engineering choices they made, so they know where to look for some of these problems. So I'd get them on your team, but most good builders don't back away at the end of 12 months. It's like, all right, we've been dancing with this problem since 6 months. We'll stick with you till we get this worked out.
Okay, one more other question, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure.
We did not know. We had a crack in the lower foundation in the basement, almost 6 feet long. We were not told about it. They must have repaired it. And about a month ago, I go down in the basement because it's unfinished and it's only my son and I. There's no reason really to go down but once a month to change the filter. You know, the first year, every month you're supposed to change it.
Sure.
But I found water in, like, the middle of the area. So I called them. They came. Here, when they took down the insulation that they have against the wall, it had already been repaired once. We were never told about the six-foot crack. They repaired it, and now I'm waiting for a good heavy rain to see if it's going to hold a second time. Should we have not been told about that?
Not necessarily. I don't agree that you should have been told about that, but understand that your house will move a lot in the first 2 years because, for example, your concrete. You had 2,000 gallons of water. Well, think how big 2,000 gallons of water is. Well, that all dries and leaves that concrete, so there are voids, and it's going to shrink when water leaves. So concrete does shrink, it does crack, and most of it's going to happen in the first 1 year and 2 years. So frankly, they don't, you know, they're monitoring this like you. So just keep
now,
checking
this,
it.
This isn't in the floor. This is on the side.
Yeah,
the window.
Any concrete, period.
Okay.
Any, especially at windows. I will guarantee you that of 10 foundations that get newly poured in the first year, at least three or four of them have cracks coming down from that hole in the wall, the weakening point called a window. So it's not an unusual situation, but it does need to be managed. It does need to be fixed. So how they respond to this is what really defines their quality. So that they told or didn't tell you, I wouldn't worry about that. But now's when they separate themselves in quality or not.
Okay, and then one other thing, that young gentleman that called about the set pump, my son has one in his home, and we went and we had an add-on piece put on from a plumbing company that if the set pump didn't work, the second part would take over. And it wasn't really that expensive. I think it was like maybe $1,500, but he said you will never have to worry about your basement flooding.
Yeah, it's a backup sump pump. Marianne, thanks for the call. Got to move on here. Thanks for the morning. Yep. Good luck. Take care. Home improvement, Scott Mosby, KMOX. Be right back.
Welcome back to the Helitech Foundation Repair Home Improvement Show. Presented by Suburban Leisure Center on Olive, 1 mile west of 141. Now, once again, your host, Scott Mosby on KMOX.
All right, back together again, back to Marianne's question about floor squeaks and what they are. Be careful in the analysis of problems, whether we're into national issues, political issues, getting along, all those things, or trying to figure out why a floor squeaks. Keep an open mind as long as possible. We all have our preconceived ideas that we jump to quickly. Keep in mind that it could be the flooring material that squeaks. That movement could be the material underneath that, or the labor. Could be the structural floor system, like floor joist, floor trusses, the plywood, OSB, chipboard, whatever you want to call the stuff that goes on top of that. So you have several different things all happening together. My point in big picture, 50,000 foot level, is try not to jump to conclusions. So in terms of finding the culprit for this floor squeak, keep your mind open and be careful not to make your partners mad. So that home builder is better worked with in a friendly, hey, how do we get this thing taken care of situation? So try and draft your friends and partners on board to solve this problem quickly, because that relationship can bail you out of a lot of baffling areas. And frankly, more minds and certainly more experienced minds always make things a little better. I got a little windy. My apologies to you. I'm going to have to come back in just a minute here. But keep in mind, keep an open mind ever more present in today's world. But it does work on trying to figure out where the culprit is for that floor squeak, because It could come from a place like me. I had no idea. The cabinet, something squeaking. I have a floor. No, we didn't. It was all built correctly, but the dynamics of how they all work together, by golly, sure caused a squeak. And all I knew was it was my problem. I built the house. So we figured it out. All right, we'll take a short pause and come back for more here on the family of University of KMOX.
Welcome back to the Helitech Foundation Repair Home Improvement Show, presented by Suburban Leisure Center on Olive, 1 mile west of 141. Now, once again, your host, Scott Mosby on KMOX.
All right, back together. I've been a little windy today, so I'll back off a little bit. Let's get right to our phone line, see if we can grab some more people and see if we can make a world a little better for some of them. And let's talk to my buddy Bob. Hey, Bob, good morning. Welcome. Happy Saturday. How can I help? Oh, hang on. Let me get the right button. Hey, Bob, are you there? Good morning. There we go. Okay. Pardon me. Fat fingers, brother. How you doing?
Oh, just fine. I put some overlay down about several years ago, and it's about wore out as welcome. What I want to do is bring it, tear it up, and see if I can find somebody to tear it up and clean the concrete underneath it. You know of anybody?
Yeah, but it's not going to turn out the way you're thinking, because if you put an overlay on it, generally if it's an epoxy or epoxy coated or something, it gets down into the pores. And the only when it comes up, when the overlay gets removed, you will actually remove the top thin pasty finish portion of the concrete. So what you will wind up with is some pretty ugly, gnarly concrete. Your next choice is then you can have another overlay epoxy. It could be smooth. It could be troweled, it could be Pebble Tech, it could be paint, it could be anything. The point being that it needs to be something, and it will be a high solids material because you actually will have removed the top pasted finish part that the cement finishers rubbed into a good-looking surface. You follow me so far?
Yeah, I had some epoxy stone put down first,
yeah,
and it started chipping on me, so we called in this guy. This is... I have a, I don't know if it is a special stuff they put down or not. It's looked like just raw concrete to me. They sprayed out and took a template and, you know, stamped it into it and let it dry.
Yes, it probably spray. Acrylic.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So you don't think it's feasible then, huh?
You'll likely have to buy either another overlay of some sort, or if you really want what you're after, you tear up and you replace the concrete. That's because your overlays are usually, you know, half the cost of replacing the concrete anyway. So after you do that a couple of times, you already bought new concrete. So but I will tell you, you know, the overlays are pretty darn good looking stuff. So you have to decide what you want and how much you're willing to spend. But I think if you pull this off, the overlay comes off, the surface prep to get all of that off and ready for a new something will leave the concrete quite unattractive.
Well, that's what I said. I was just wondering if there's some way to clean it or not. I figured it would kind of get messy up under there.
Well, cleaning it is possible. You remove it, and sometimes it's called a pellet blast, which is like a big Hoover-looking machine that actually takes steel shot, kind of like shot from a shotgun, and blasts it down into the concrete, literally abrades the top layer of concrete off of that surface, and then you have an open, clean, ready to bond to raw concrete surface. But it's not ready for prime time.
No. All right, then. That's what I was kind of wondering whether I want to get some opinion. Or I just wondered if you knew anybody who would do it. But if I have to put another overlay down, I might as well just keep on patching this one and keeping up with it.
And that's kind of the reality. Once you go into, it's kind of like painting brick. Once you paint brick, it's really hard to unpaint brick. Well, once you put an overlay over concrete, you're kind of into putting something on that because, you know, some of those areas will bond better than others. So, yeah, and continuing your overlay is probably the choice you're going to wind up making.
Yeah. All righty, then. As I said, we just wondered if it was feasible.
Yeah, you bet, Bob. It's feasible. May not be what you want, though.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Scott.
You bet. Thanks for the call. Let's see what's up with the other Bob. Bob on lumber prices. Hey, Bob. Good afternoon. Good morning. Welcome to KMOX. How are you? Yeah, Bob. Are you there? Scott Mosby. You're live on KMOX talking about lumber prices, I think. Hello. Listen to your phone and not your radio. If you're listening to your radio, you're 7 seconds behind us. Yep. Are you there, Bob? All right, let's put him on hold there and see what's going on. Let's get with, how about Tim on Washer? Hey, Tim, good morning. How are you, sir?
Good morning. I'm doing great. I want to thank you for giving me a reference to an electrician when I needed one. And also, I needed some help with some black streaks. Let's see, it was 2 weeks ago. Some black streaks that were appearing in my commode. and you told me about the CLR and the vinegar. And that worked absolutely wonderfully. So
isn't that
now
amazing?
The question, it truly is. The question I have for you quickly here, two questions actually, is I moved into my home not quite a year ago, and I have a washer and dryer, and I was wondering how long do the hoses on the washer, how long are they good for? Because sometimes I go out of town, and I have seen where they have burst, once they get of age. So how long are those good for? And then also, next question quickly, and then I'll leave you alone. The valves, the water valves. I know that they get calcium and they get all kinds of, almost like concrete, like you had said before. How long do those go? Is there something I can do like CLR or the vinegar on them and put WD-40 after I clean them? Or now it's your turn.
Okay, Tim, I'm going to hang up on you here. We're running out of time. I'll get to these answers here. Number one, if the hoses are cause for concern, change them. Get the new metal stainless steel covered ones. They typically are reliable from 5 to 7 years. But if you're a traveler like that and you can't stop the problem, change those hoses every 5 years. The valves are usually not a problem. We'll be back for hour two on KMOX after this.
KMOX, at your service. Welcome to the Helitech Foundation Repair Home Improvement Show. Presented by Suburban Leisure Center on Olive, 1 mile west of 141. Now, here's your host, Scott Mosby, on KMOX.
All right, back together. Lunchtime, center of the day. The clock is straight up and down. Right here in the middle of the country, University of KMOX phone lines open one more hour. The topic, questions and answers, all the experiences and exchanges are all about you. Phone lines here on KMOX for your questions or answers, 314-436-7900, 436-7900, or 800-925-1120. That's toll-free anywhere on the globe if you can get a phone line or an internet connection, 800-925-1120. Follow me here on KMOX.com, Radio AM 1120 Signal, or on radio.com as well. So lots of things happening. Scott Mosby at your service. This is hour two of the Helitech Home Improvement Show, and we are really rolling here. We've got some great calls on the board already. I shorted Tim a little bit at the end, ran down a little bit of time. I'm a little windy today. And Tim's question, number one, he travels, and that's the driver. If he's away and he can't fix an issue that happens in his absence while traveling, his question was, how long to wash hoses last? And it's like, well, as long as you are confident. So whether or not the issue is whether the hoses fit, if you're worried about it, get new hoses put on there. Always the stainless steel braided type is my choice because, the rubber, they do bulge and they do split and they can deliver a lot of water flooding into a basement or a main level wherever your washer is. So those, I typically change those out in my world about 5 years. And I actually put it on my calendar because I never remember how old a washer and dryer is. I'm having trouble remembering my own birthday. So I do put that on my calendar. I'm a list maker, I'm a planner. So my mornings are all about, making lists of what's going to happen today, tomorrow, things I usually forget. What do I want to remember? What errors am I going to run when I'm out doing that thing? So anyway, keep in mind that those washer dryer hoses change out about every 5 or 7 years. They'll tell you they're good for 10, but I start worrying after 5. So I change them out. They're a little pricey, but they're worth the investment because if you think they're expensive buying those hoses, try and rebuild your flooded house. That's really expensive. Second question he had was the hot and cold valves. How long do those last? Well, sometimes their seals will last because generally washers and dryers, when I travel, if I'm gone for a week or two, then I will turn the water off. If I remember, there's the problem. I'll turn the water off to that washer dryer. But generally, for the most part, those units, and now the other surprising part, I said washer dryer, steam dryers now have a water connection. Darnest thing. We went for a new washer dryer a little while ago. Lo and behold, they come in and there are three water hoses. Are you serious? Three water hoses? Any fool knows it. We're drying clothes, it's not making them wet. Well, if you're using a steam feature on these new whiz-bang dryers, you wind up with a hot and a cold for the washer and another hose for the dryer. Yep, there you go. So I'm not kidding. Hoses for the washer dryer as well. So the point being that the valves get shut off on and off in my house 2-3 times a year. That's actually good. It keeps them moving, pliable, kind of like a knee that hasn't moved for a long time. It gets sore and atrophies and it doesn't quite work all as well as it should. Keep in mind, those valves really aren't problems for very long. So don't worry about changing those valves. Maybe every 20, 30 years, just like you rebuild any other, outside hose bib faucet on the outside of the house, you typically want to rebuild the guts on that. So, Tim, don't worry too much about the valves. But on those hoses, in my world, change them every 5 years. If you're home and around and retired, then, it's not such a big deal. But when you're away, it is cause for concern and avoiding future problems. Let's go to the phone lines here and talk, fire up the phone. Bosco, you ready? Yeah. Okay, that's my gerbil back there on the treadmill making 50,000 watts to make this radio happen. Let's go talk to my friend Greg. Hey, Greg, good afternoon. Welcome to lunch on KMWX, sir. How can I help?
Hi, Scott. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
What I was calling about was my wife and I had just purchased, we're in the process of purchasing a house, and it's got a sump pit in the basement with a sump pump. And our inspector that went through said that he could not get the lid off to check the sump pump. Now, I'm not talking about the thick plastic lid, because that was setting off to the side in the pictures in the report. I don't know what other lid he could be talking about. And why it would be... Go ahead, sorry.
It's possible, Greg. Some of those things... Here's how this sump pump gets installed. So they put this plastic bucket down in the floor. And sometimes when they pour the concrete floor around it, the pressure of that concrete can distort the shape of that round black bucket, sump pit, sump tub, whatever, pit, whatever you want to call it. And those lids can get really hard to get off because they sometimes have to get jammed in there to put them in. So it's possible that, number one, it's distorted and it is tight and it is just too hard. His question might be, if I get this thing off, will I be able to put it back on? Once he pulls it off, he owns it. So he just may have just left it alone. So I would authorize it to go ahead and pull the thing off. Take a look. Look for fasteners and screws that might be holding them down. Also, there is some wisdom when you get into, radon. Radon is underground gas, and a water collection system can be a wonderful radon gas mitigator. Sometimes they seal those lids purposely, caulking them down if it's dry enough, and then they actually put exhausts on them. So because it's a great gas collector system as well. So be open to having a radon mitigation system that ties in somehow with that as well. It usually not, but it's a secondary thing. So just keep an open mind to what some do-it-yourselfers typically do. It's very seldom professionally done because there's not enough of a vacuum. You can't draw enough of a negative pressure to really get underneath the slab and, draw that gas up. But there is some logic that says, if there's gas under the slab in a radon situation, just get it out anyway. So be open to it. It might be sealed.
Okay, they do have that radon thing on there too, and that was tested and that was in good shape.
Great.
Now, one other thing that I was thinking while I was on hold waiting for your call, for you to answer, my realtor also mentioned something about a survey, and the survey is over 4 years old, and she said that something about it expires after 4 years. Could you elaborate on that, or do you know anything about that?
Well, it's more what could have happened in the last 4 years. So the neighbor might have needed to put a garage addition on in there. You know, for zoning reasons, they needed another foot width on their yard. So there might be a registered a survey that says now your property line is a foot inside where it used to be, or MSD came in, or Ameren, one of the utilities, needed to get a utility easement to do some improvement to their system. So basically, the practice, there's no legal reason why 4 years or 3 years or any time is. There's a prudence tenant that says, you know, a lot can happen in 4 years. You might want to get a real fresh survey if you're buying an expensive asset and make sure what, you know, it's kind of like the inspect what you expect. If you think it's okay, well, just have it done and make sure it is. That's so it's sure. it's a wise choice is what she's saying.
Sounds great. Well, thank you very much for your time and your wise man. We appreciate you. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Greg. Often bitten, let's put it that way. People ask me, where did you learn all that stuff? It's like, I've stumbled and made more mistakes than any walking human being you know.
Yeah.
Thanks, Greg.
Please have a great day.
All righty. Bye-bye. Home Improvement, Scott Mosby, Hour 2. We are going up to 1 o'clock today, and it's a great day to be on KMOX. Always things. I will recount some of these questions so that we go through some of these things. I know in the first hour, we've just had great questions, good topics, deep topics as well, and all the things. So after talking to Greg, and with a radon mitigation system, which is nothing more than a real low, slow-grade vacuum system that sucks a vacuum and draws the air out from underneath the concrete slab in the basement. Well, if you have a sump pump lid and you have, you know, that lid on, it leaks, it just a plate that sits there. So it's possible they caulked that down and sealed that down so that the radon could draw a proper negative pressure and do its job as it's supposed to. So I would propose that to you, Greg. It's probably a sealed sump pump lid related to the radon mitigation. Phone lines here on KMOX for you, 314-436-7900, 800-925-1120. My name is Scott Mosby. I'm thrilled to be here. I love my Saturdays on KMOX. And all my friends that call in and say hello to me, it's a great deal. You know what? I get paid to talk. Yeah, I'm not Scout's honor. I sit down here, I talk, and, you know, KMOX says, yeah, here's a check. It's, wow, it's kind of a license to steal, isn't it? Well, maybe not. Scott Mosby here, KMOX. I'm getting a little bit down. Maybe I've been by myself a little too long with this COVID thing. We'll be right back for more after this on KMOX. All right, back together, Home Improvement, Scott Mosby. We are live and lively talking a little bit about sump pumps today. All a sump pit, sump pump drain tile is a collection method, usually pipe and rock, old style stuff. There are technologies well beyond that, but pipe and rock systems basically creating a void, a place where the water would collect, drain into a bucket, sump bucket, pit, pump, whatever it is, and then pump it out. So that's really what we are, water collection and water exhaust. When it gets more complex than that, or you have bigger water flow issues, as we had caller called in, and I think Marianne, perhaps, her son put a backup sump pump on that, something that Helitech advocates as well, that if you've got a situation where water comes and it can gather fast, oftentimes if you have failure of the sump pump, everything may be working because a water collection system does just that. It makes the water collect in one place. So you need to now get rid of it or exhaust it with a pump. So keep that in mind. And in situations where that pump runs a lot, in my opinion, and recommend a second backup sump pump. So you would have a standard sump pump where the float goes up and down, does all the heavy lifting. So 90% of the time that sump pump runs and gets rid of the water. If it fails or it becomes a water gaining situation that it can't keep up, then there's a second float a little bit higher. So that if the water comes up higher than normal, the second pump pumps in. You have to be careful because you can drop the water out of that pit really fast to the point that you can lose the prime on that second top pump. Anyway, 314-436-7900-800-925-1120. Let's go to my friend here, Gloria, and see what's cooking. Gloria, thanks for your patience. How can I help you?
Hi. Good to talk with you again, Scott, and thank you so much for all of this great information that you give.
Thank you.
What I'd like to remind people about is this is January is National Radon Action Month. Mm. And most people are not aware of if they're living in an environment that has high levels of radon. It's very easy to test your home for radon. You can get a short-term test. In fact, if you live in Missouri, you can go to the radon program department in Missouri, and they will send you a free test. However, you can also get one at a short-term test at any hardware store, basically. Now, yeah. Those short-term tests run about 3 to 6 days. But there, as I said, radon is the leading cause of lung cancer in non-smokers. My husband passed with lung cancer 15 years ago, and I've been an advocate for getting radon testing throughout the nation, and so people don't, you know, find out about radon in this very terrible way of getting diagnosed with lung cancer. So that's what I'd like. I'm not sure in Illinois. I don't think that the radon mitigation system is put into the sump pump. I believe that is not the acceptable way in Illinois.
Correct.
But I'm not sure, and I don't know about Missouri. So thank you so much for educating people about the danger of radon, and I have an organization that I started some years ago, and it's called Citizens for Radioactive Radon Reduction, and I live in Illinois, very close to Missouri, but in Illinois. And I just appreciate anything you can tell people about how easy it is to test and the mitigation system. Be sure if they get one installed, if their level is between, well, if it... If it's 4 or higher, 4 picocuries, that's what the EPA uses, but the World Health Organization uses 3.7 picocuries per liter of action, per liter of air, and that's their action reference. So the lower you can get the level, the better, below 2. My mitigation system was installed, 12, 13. It was installed almost 15 years ago, as soon as I found out that, you know, that was the likely cause of my husband's death. And my fan works, you know, it had worked 12 years constantly. The fan works every minute of every day. I did have, after 12 years, my fan needed to be replaced, which I did get it replaced. And,
it's an expensive, you know, too. It's not a big deal.
No, it isn't. It isn't a big deal. You know, it's just a safety. We're spending so much time at home, but it doesn't matter, you know. And any time that you test, sometimes even the level of radon might be higher in the summer because we all have air conditioning, certainly here in this area, and we have closed. The tighter
Close
your home,
houses.
The tighter the envelope of your home, the more likelihood of that radon gas being, you know, in your home. And
Gloria, let's speed it up here. You've got a good point, and I want to actuate this, but Good message. Thank you for your role in all of this. Radon's real. It kills. It's cheap to fix. The life you save may be your own. Get her done.
Yes. Thanks, Scott. I appreciate it. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for the message, Gloria. And Gloria has been an advocate. I know of Gloria for a long time. Hard lesson to learn the hard way via death. So she lost her husband to lung cancer, unlikely cause other than this radon. So just be aware, radon tests always good. And again, well, what should I get mitigated? Well, above four or above is what's considered actionable in the real estate world. But if you're worried, you know, put a second radon mitigation. So you can drop it down. You can manage radon. So anyway, just do is Gloria's message. Let's see what's cooking here and talk to, how about Mike? Hey, Mike, Scott Mosby here. Welcome to KMWX. How can we help, sir?
Hey, Scott. Good show as always. I got a question about knob and tube wiring in an old house.
Yes, sir.
We're looking to purchase, say, an older home, and it has knob and tube, and want to know if it's safe and if it's insurable, the house is insurable with it, and what can we, do we have to replace it? What's the general take on all that?
Knob and tube wiring, inherently, my father, who, you know, if he were alive, he'd be, you know, near, golly, he'd be 102 roughly. He was okay with knob and tube wiring. Knob and tube wiring becomes very unsafe, primarily because it gets so old, the insulation falls off of it. So you wind up with kind of bare wires. But the real problem, being a remodeler and a guy who got his hands into walls and all this, is where Mo, Larry, and Curly tried to connect new wiring to old knob and tube, and it is for electricians only. Basically, they will leave the knob and tube alone and put in new circuits as necessary. So many of the insurance companies will not insure knob and tube wired homes, primarily because they don't know whether Mo, Larry, and Curly got in and did any wiring or not. So they just basically say it's not a good thing. So I would inspect the home. The home inspector will be your eyes and ears. And basically, he needs to look for trouble. And it usually is up in the attic. But knob and tube wiring, I mean, the way knob and tube runs is basically you put the positive wire on one ceiling joist, and then the other one 14 and a half inches away. So your positive and negative are really far apart. And then they come together inside a box. Well, when you get Mo, Larry, and Curly just jumping onto these things and literally hot wiring stuff, that's where the problems are. When we're at Mosby, if we have knob and tube, we'll look at it. Generally, we want to leave it alone, and we will run all new circuits where they're needed because they're not grounded. You just have two conductors. So we run electronic appliances, TVs, stuff like that on all new electric. So don't be afraid of it, but you know, it's kind of like aluminum wiring. It can be managed, but it must be managed as well.
Okay, thank you.
You bet. Good luck. Scott Mosby, Home Improvement. We've got a half an hour left and some great questions, great topics, great help from our callers too, by the way. Thanks for the family of KMOX. You are part of the community keeping us all wise, safe, and healthy. We'll be back for more after this on University of KMOX. All right, welcome back. Let's take on some new topics, see what's happening with my brethren, Scott. See what's cooking. Hey, Scott, welcome to KMOX. Good afternoon. How can we help?
Yeah, Scott. Great Scots.
Amen, brother.
As I have another one. As Scott is my witness.
I haven't heard that one.
That one.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Anyway, I'm thinking I'm going to put in a generator, standby generator. All my house is electric, is all electric, and I'm thinking about that. I'd rather not do the transfer switch because it's so expensive. And they have a lockout that I've mm-hmm. seen a little bit about, and I was wondering what your thoughts are on that. And I have another question about that.
Oh, standby switch, absolute must, absolutely. Yeah. And here's how and why they are required. Because if you, so the power goes out, so the whole grid's down, they send a wireman up on the electric pole, and he's trying to get this thing fixed. You fire up your generator, and you back charge all those service wires and conductors. You blow that wireman off the pole, and he loses his life because you didn't buy a standby switch. You need to be off the grid, completely separated, and that's why. So it's really safety for you and others. Likewise, if you're fired up and you've got this generator going in and they recharge this, you can actually damage your generator as well. So there's some important electronics that go with it, and there are reasons why, more than safety. And, you know, likewise, you can make, if you have an automatic start, you don't even need to be there, and your generator goes on and it keeps your freezer running and all those other things.
Yeah,
so
I'd like to do that in the future. That's kind of a lot of money, but... someday.
Well, you know, I mean, if you're getting into a generator, either do it or don't do it. But if you have to do it, you know, and you know, I've plugged them into the dryer circuits and thrown the breaker, all that stuff. But I have to be there for that. And after a while, I just put in an automatic, you know, self-actuating generator, and I don't even think about it. It just happens. Nice.
Well, they have this lockout. System that were that's in lieu of a transfer switch,
okay,
which is a very complicated system. Makes you shut off the main so that it can't recharge the grid grid.
An either or switch, yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly. But I have two 200 amp panels, and I don't know if it'll work. I think they both have a main shut-off switch. You know what I'm saying?
That's where you get into how your house is wired, and basically how I wound up getting a bigger generator and an auto switch, because by the time I rewired those two 200s and double bought standby on and on, it's like, well, I'm rebuilding this thing anyway. I'm either
sure.
So you're not facing an easy one there is the reality.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yep.
Thanks for your time, Scott.
You bet. Good luck, Scott. Take care, brother.
Good day.
All right. Home improvement. Next up, we've got, let's see who's waiting a long time. Let's talk to Ralph. Hey, Ralph, Scott Mosby. How you doing? Happy Saturday, brother. How can I help?
Hi there, Scott. I am contemplating remodeling a master bathroom that has one of those garden tubs that the prior owner had bought from the builder.
Yeah.
And it's pretty useless, and there's also no storage. So I'm contemplating if I'm going to cut this bathroom about considering putting in the warm floor, and what are any pros and cons on putting in that warm floor system?
Only pros, frankly, they've been around long enough that they seldom fail. Some of the switches in the wall need to be changed out because they go on and off and on and off like a thermostat. So sometimes those get replaced every 5 to 15 years. The wiring usually stays in really good shape. I poo-pooed those things so much. It's like, well, that just seems like a lot of money. Well, if you ever live on one of those things, or you have a bathroom that's just a wee bit uncomfortable, a little cool, you get a warm floor underneath those feet, or a guy like me, I'm kind of skinny and small. If you warm my feet up, I'm instantly comfortable, to the point that years ago, after I got over my own hang up on this stuff, Ralph, I got to the point where I would offer our clients, they'd say, I just don't have any more money. And my offer to them was, I'll tell you what, I'll put in the heated floor on my nickel. And if you like it, then you pay me sometime in the next 2 years. But I'm sure enough that you will love this. And people with high blood pressure that are always hot all the time, you're that, you know, hot person, the warm floor isn't that much. But if you're the other side, if you've got low blood pressure and you're cold all of the time, oh boy, howdy. These hot floors are really something. Once you get one, everything you have after that will be. So, frankly, there are a lot of things I would forego in a bathroom except the heated floor. But I'm a low blood pressure cold guy all the time, you know?
Great. Thank you very much.
You bet, Ralph. good luck. And the height of that is to be managed, because when you put a heated floor in, your mud gets a little thicker, the wires get laid in. So keep in mind, you've got your, you know, cement board, your proper underlayment for that tile, your tile thickness, your adhesive thickness, and now your wire thickness. So your heated floor is inherently a little thicker, taller, bigger threshold transition. Scott Mosby, Home Improvement KMOX. We'll be back for more right after this on KMOX. All right, welcome back. Lunchtime, KMOX, middle of the day, bean time. Time to strap on the feed bag, put a few shrimp on the bar. Well, maybe you don't want to go outside. Let's just stay inside and have some warm soup. Let's go to the phone lines here, see what's happening with Bob. Hey, Bob, good afternoon. How can I help you, sir?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Scott, for taking my call. I've got two short questions. One is on our ceilings in our kitchen and dining room and so on, we have nails that keep popping up through the drywall. However, we've had people come in and hammer them back in and put plastering over it and paint, repaint, and they come popping back again. I don't seem to be able to get an answer as to what we can do to stop this from occurring.
What do you think of that stain is?
And then there's a stain that appears also not at the point of the nails popping through, but various places just randomly in the ceiling of our great room, in our dining room, on the drywall. And it'll be like a brownish coloration, irregular, circular somewhat in pattern. But we've had them painted over, and we've had the ceiling checked for leaks. There's no leaks that can be found from the roofing people. So, again, they reappear in different areas, and we don't know the source of that either.
Nail pops. Let's start with the nail pops.
All right.
If you have a truss roof, and this gets to one of the early callers about a squeaky floor that...
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Structural flex and movement is a natural part of every man-made structure. You know, even the big grand skyscraper in Dubai actually sways, and it moves and it flexes. So does the floor. So does your roof system of trusses. Sometimes there are joints where those naturally occurring or designed in movements get excessive, and they structurally are not unsound, but they cause movement of the drywall where it cracks and nail pops occur. That's one thing. So the answer for that is to get up in the attic. As my father used to say, screw blued and tattooed it. Basically, we get up and we nail a whole bunch of 2x lumber up there flat behind the drywall, stick it to the trusses so that there's greater surface, and we basically then, before we put the wood on, we glue it to the backside of the drywall. So we reinforce that so that it's more acting where three trusses are acting together instead of maybe one. That's one possibility. So hang on, Bob. This is a long one. This is what we call around Mosby a Scott answer. It's like, hold on, we're going for a ride. Number two, truss lift. Truss lift, when you get a place like in the Midwest, when that attic can be 160 degrees in the summer and it can be negative 16 in the winter, that amount of temperature swing or thermal movement is a ton. And literally, lumber can try and go back and be a tree. And it will manifest sometimes in truss lift, where the actual truss warps. And it will literally lift up. It looks like settling. It's often described as, my house is settling, the ceiling is separated from the walls. Oftentimes there's a situation called truss lift, and you can look it up online and see what that is. But it's you know, when the lumber is, you know, you just get a renegade piece of lumber built into one of these roof trusses. So number two is roof truss. When you get into the brown spots like that that are really unusual, do you have any ductwork up in the attic?
No.
No. Okay. You might have a air conditioning vent that blows on that area of the ceiling. For example, in the summertime when the air conditioner runs a lot. You can actually have cold air blowing on one part of a wall or a ceiling to where it gets colder than it should. And then it can actually condense. Now you have warm, moist air up in the attic just a couple inches away. You've got this overly cold ceiling drywall thing, and it condenses. So you can't see it, but it can get water droplets on it. No leak, no roof problem, just hot and cold condensation. You can wind up with something like that. So bottom line is, Bob, I don't really know what either one of these are. I can come up with some plausible explanations of why they occur. They are all fixable and avoidable, but sometimes the cost of fixing them exceeds what you're willing to pay.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Scott. I appreciate your time, and it gives us a better idea of what's happening now.
And I'll tell you, there have been situations over the last 20 years at Mosby where, you know, our painters go back and they you know, primer this, you know, they basically cut the chunk of drywall out, you know, put a whole bunch of lumber up there, glue it and finish it. They say, I don't know why this thing is staining, but I'm done dancing with it. We're just starting all over, you know, so there's wisdom in that too.
Okay. Okay.
Kind of silly, well, but for the most part, they worked. You know, it's like, well, when you've had enough, just call uncle and, you know, change the rules.
All right. Okay. Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Good luck there, Bob. All right. Home Improvement, Scott Mosby. Let's see what else do we have here. You know, I think I may have to take a break here. Scott Mosby, Home Improvement. Oh, no, I'm called off. We're going back to my buddy Joseph. Hey, Joseph, Scott Mosby here. No break for me. You're on. How can I help?
Yes, I have a 1974 home, and I have my fiberglass tub shower combinations with the Delta faucets on them and the diverters at the bottom for the shower. Okay. I went in, I changed all my little cups on the thing, and it that worked fine. And I went to take the diverter off because they leak like mad when you're taking a shower. And that came off very readily. You know, you just put the wrench to it and turn it. But my second bath is identical, and I cannot get that diverter off on the second bath.
Yeah.
And I've put blaster on it. I've put WD-40 on it. I went up through the ports and everything to break that one loose, and it just won't turn. And it has no ports on it where it's a slip-on type, you know.
Yeah. I'll tell you
I
what.
I was just wondering, what do you do with that? Just let half the water come out of the spout and take your shower?
Well, you basically tear it up, taking it apart, and replumb it. What happens is you've got so much mineral deposit on there that it's not going anywhere. It may be a threaded fixture. Some of those spouts are threaded on.
It's the threaded one. The one I took off on the first one, they're on the second floor. The one in the one bathroom, no problem. You put a new one on, works fine. New spout on, you know, it's just on a thread. Okay, but the second one, I cannot get that one to break loose off the threads to put a new one on.
Well, I'll tell you how this would go, should go. Basically, you hire a plumber. The plumber comes in, shuts off the water to the house, and he goes to battle. And he will put a pipe wrench on that and probably an extender pipe and rip that thing off. Because since it's threaded, it may twist, and he'll have a conversation before this. He may twist that pipe off.
That's what I'm afraid to break. I don't put a whole lot of pressure on it because I don't want to break the pipe.
Right.
You might. Huh?
And you might. The difference between you and the plumber is that plumber has a lot of experience of just at what point is that last little oomph likely going to rip this thing apart and when do I stop? You're buying experience.
It kind of moves the whole, you can see, the, you know. it's putting stress on the tree in the back, you know. And I don't want to.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're twisting that whole assembly, oh, I'd leave well enough alone, frankly.
Yeah, I don't want to break a bunch of other seals in there, you know, solder.
Sure. Yeah. You may go from wasting pennies of water to thousands in piping.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. Maybe I just ought to put up with the waste that I have with half the water coming out of the spout, even though I got the diverter on. You know?
I will say when that house goes to be sold, they will require that to be repaired then. So you may want, you know, sooner or later, somebody's going to swallow that sandwich.
Okay, dokie. Thanks a lot.
You bet. Hey, good luck there. See you.
Yeah, I poured the oil to it, and it just, I put everything in the world to soften that seal, but it just won't. Yeah,
okay. And that's the reality. If you went through all of those pieces by a process of elimination, you did all the prudent things 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You know, you're now facing the nuclear option. That you know, the question is, do you have enough courage to press that nuclear button that might result in ripping the wall apart? You know.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to twist the pipe. And have a break in the system. Okay. And thank you.
You're welcome. Bye now. And likely for Joseph, having a plumber come out with the experience that Joseph has, likely they'll open up the wall from the other side if they can get access, and somebody else will put a wrench on the tree, which is the assembly of all the pipes coming together around that valve, and hold that steady so that the plumber's pipe wrench over that spout that's trying to be removed, really... puts, as my father would describe it, puts the cheese to the pipe in the right place, as opposed to twisting all the pipes around it and causing damage to an assembly of plumbing pipes that could be really pricey to replace. So anyway, kind of an interesting show. Thank you for being part of University of KMOX. I learned a few things. I just want to go back to one of our callers and remind you, and this is Gloria, the Radon Action Month of January. She calls in here every few years, and just it's radon is everywhere once it gets above a certain area, and it is very prevalent in many of the counties in Illinois, but always be prudent. Have your house checked for radon. The actionable point in a real estate contract is 4 parts. And you don't need to know what the picocuries or any of that is. Just if it's 4 or above, it's actionable legally. So you should get it mitigated. But if you're 3.2, 3.5, something like that, you're close to it. If you're wrong, and all they're doing, this is generally kind of an average test, so they're averaging the air in the house. So if you get close to that, just have it mitigated. All it is a very quiet, low-turning motor and a plastic pipe that comes out, and it just like a little vacuum cleaner that sucks a vacuum on the space underneath a concrete floor in your basement and changes that air. So in goes the good air and out goes the bad. Home Improvement, Scott Mosby, KMOX. Stay tuned for an afternoon of KMOX here in the Voice of St. Louis.